His name is David Luke Fladman, Commander of the Armies of the West, General of the Somerset Regions, loyal servant to the true Emperor, Thomas George Llewellyn Shanklin, father to a noisy cat, husband to a vegan, and he will have a salad in this life or the next. It's time for Flats and Shanks.
Can I just say, I bloody love Guinness or London Pride. It is my favourite drink of the lot. I cannot get enough of it. Cheers, everybody.
Yes. He's turning into Andy Goode overnight. He's got a bit of a paunch as well now, Shanks. He used to be a religious gym goer, and now he's quite fat and very lazy, and it's showing. You are getting a bit fatter, aren't you? Jokes aside.
Not at all, mate. Not at all. Muscle weighs more than fat as well, right? But yeah, win the crowd, win your freedom. That's how I work, all right?
Michelle, our agent, is here as well, but she's trying to hide at the back. But we've made sure that she can't because I don't have a pint and she needs to bring me one. So she has to come to the front, which she will hate. We're going to make that happen. But if you want to do pictures and stuff with the lads afterwards and get them to sign whatever you want, they're all selfies, go for it. Do as many as you want. But we just ask that no one films or records it during. It's just one of those things, you know, if you got Lawrence up here, it's going to go out anyway.
Don't tell him who's coming, mate.
But oh, sorry. Of Arabia up here. Fishburne. Lawrence Fishburne's here, ladies and gentlemen, straight from Hollywood. Boys in the Hood was his best movie, I think you'll all agree.
Morpheus.
But it's just one of those things that if someone does that with a phone, it just ruins it. So you can do it if you want, but all three of us are really good in a fight, so good luck to you.
Yeah, we will find you and we will kill you. Right, so this chap that we've got come in was born in Shepherd's Bush.
They know all this already, but yeah.
An Italian father. And an Irish mother. Won the Sevens World Cup, won the Rugby World Cup, one club for the whole of his career, 85 caps for England, Barbarian, British and Irish Lion. Please, I hope you can hear us, put your hands together, whoop, cheer, go mad for Lorenzo, Bruno, Nero, Nespresso, Carliccio, Peroni, Delalio OBE!
You got a drink, Lawrence. Excellent. That makes Shanks and Lawrence have got drinks. Excellent. Don't worry about me.
I mean, the best thing about this as well is when you do re-listen to it, which you will do, because, you know, we need the download numbers, yeah?
Yeah, top 100 this week.
I would have put some amazing music to that. Yeah, probably, I don't know, Bewitch, something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, you might not. Yeah. How you doing, Lol?
I'm all right, thanks. This, hello, everyone. This kind of feels like a sort of Right Said Fred tribute band, doesn't it?
Yeah, a little bit. Do you know, actually, since you mentioned them...
It's a bit of a worry, that, isn't it? Really?
I don't know. Knowing you, Lawrence, I might not be the only person in the room who's done this, but I've actually had a jacuzzi with Right Said Fred. So I don't know if you have either.
What should we start with? Our favourite one? Or
Yeah, our favourite one, yeah. But I actually have had a hot tub with Right Said Fred and Frank Lampard, but that's for another night. It was a great night. We got to know each other very well. Cheers, everyone. Very nice to see you. How are things going, Lawrence?
I'm good. Yeah, it's a massive week, isn't it? Very exciting week. So, yeah, good. Really good.
Are you a busy man at the moment? Are you kind of flat out over the Six Nations grafting and giving opinion and shit like that?
Well, just, you know, doing my research for the game tomorrow. I was doing that at Cheltenham on Tuesday, which was fantastic. Same sort of thing, race horses, same cathedral, different choir, you know, usual stuff. But no, I was had a big week at Cheltenham, big day. Didn't really start my week off terribly well, but I've been working very hard ever since.
Mm. Yeah, we went to Cheltenham on Wednesday, didn't we?
Yeah, it's quiet. It's good to be back.
Yeah, it was amazing, actually.
You clean up?
No. What Cheltenham has to offer, we did not see any of that. We literally went to one area at 11 o'clock in the morning and didn't come out till 8:30. We didn't even go walking around the stadium. It was ladies' day as well.
Stadium. He didn't even know. He doesn't even know where he was. He doesn't even know where he was.
Is that because you were in the green room?
Didn't go walking around the pitch. Didn't even see the pitch. The court, didn't see the court once.
Did you tell me the truthfully now?
Okay, yeah.
Did you see a horse?
No, did not see one horse. I didn't see a horse.
Sat opposite a bloody fear. I know. I'm completely joking. No, did not see one horse. Watched all the horse racing on TVs. They had a little betting corner which we went to, but it was actually really good. It was, you know, it was a drink-a-thon.
But yeah. I'm one of those.
But responsibly, all right.
Austin Healey was there, and I followed him to the betting thing, and we'd all had a few drinks by this stage. And Austin was there, and he was like, right, I don't know what I'm talking about. I haven't looked at a single leaflet, haven't seen a horse, don't care. So I just went to the front, and after Austin went, I just said to the lady, I'll have exactly what Austin had. And Austin's a show-off twat. So he's actually a very, very lovely man, but he's a massive show-off. So I just said, I'll have what he had, and you give your little card over, and I realised that it was like 180 quid that I'd bet, as opposed to like the £8.50 I was going to bet, because I'm completely clueless. I don't know, do you want to take a risk?
She probably thought Austin was one of the jockeys, to be fair. A bit of insider trading going on.
Do I know you, little fella? Anyway, so one of them, there were three bets within that 180 quid, which was a lot, significantly more than I intended to bet. And one of them came in. I went each way and came in. And one of the people I was with had a special app that worked out exactly what I'd won. And from this portion of the bet, which was 80 quid, I'd won 960 quid. So this was like, this absolutely makes your day. We're like happy days, like 75% high knee sprint to the little tote thing. Pick it up. Turns out she was off by 1-0. It's 96 quid. So it was a £16 profit, and that was my only winner. So shit day, actually.
Apart from obviously going to chat in a moment, what takes your time up in the week these days? Because I know you've got a charity, which you do a lot of work for. Can you explain to us a little bit about that and how we get involved?
I was telling people earlier on, I work for a charity called Dallaglio Rugby Works. We work with young kids who have been excluded from mainstream education, so... Basically, people who have been expelled, permanently expelled. I wonder why I'd set that sort of charity up, really.
Yeah, what interests you about that, Lawrence?
I've got natural affinity to those people, really. So, very, very seriously, we work with young kids aged 14 to 17 who find themselves outside of mainstream. And what happens in this country is they end up in what's called pupil referral units, alternative provision schools. 80% of people in prison in this country have been permanently expelled from school. So what that tells you is the system is failing massively. We have a number of coaches that go in there, similar to School of Hard Knocks. As a charity, we work with these young kids. We get them into full-time education or employment. By the time they leave school, we mentor them for the year after they've left school. And it's having a massively positive impact on their lives. And I think just because you get excluded from school doesn't mean society should sort of necessarily give up on you. So that requires a lot of money. So we do a fair bit of fundraising. I'm doing another big bike ride.
Is this the Cycle Slam?
Yeah, the Dallaglio Cycle Slam, which effectively is a rugby tour on wheels.
I'm busy, mate. I'll give 50 quid or I'm not going.
I've seen it. You've actually got on a bike yourself, haven't you, really?
Well, I did. I've done the big one. I've done John O'Groats to Land's End. Piece of piss.
Okay. So in June, after the Premiership final, we are cycling from Evian, which is in France, to Croatia, to Split in Croatia. So it's about 3,000 kilometres. So if you want to have a look at that and get involved in the charity, just go to Dallaglio Cycle Slam. And if anyone fancies signing up in a moment of madness, please.
Do you have to do the whole thing, or can you just do
just 5 days.
How many miles would you be going every day?
Well, I went out on a training ride today, so I did 85 kilometres today, which was a nice nice little training ride.
Yeah, it was a bit windy today, actually.
Yeah, it was a bit tough.
How we catch the wind more than everyone else, isn't it? When I did the bike ride, I don't know if I mentioned it, a massive bike ride, but just pissed it was easy. And I was literally pulled around in the slipstream of a guy called Steve Marson, who works for Halfords. You know Steve?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And he told me a bit on your ride, and he said... And I said, hopefully, because Lawrence is a big bloke as well, hopefully he's a terrible cyclist like me. And he said, unfortunately, he's got a natural engine, which you don't have, clearly. Average speed of 12 miles an hour over 998 miles. That takes a long time. But he said that he was stunned by your endurance, absolutely stunned. And I was like, on the bike? He's like, well, he's a good cyclist, but I don't know if he's glorifying it or not, Hollywooding it a little bit with a bit of paprika, but he said you were absolutely bollocks every night. Every night of the tour, and you were flat out up the hills every day. And he's like, this guy's just made differently.
As you know, I mean, we've had 20 years practice, really, haven't we?
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. Tolerances are high at this stage.
No, I mean, as long as you get a functional 5 hours, you can pretty much you can pretty much do anything you want, really, the next day, can't you? Do you not find that functional five?
Yeah, exactly. Just like Winston Churchill, Margaret Thatcher, you and me. Perfect. We make it. We make it. And you've got this... BBH, is that, what do you call it? A sport?
Yeah, so
thing,
so when
it?
I retired from rugby, I took the option of going into setting up an agency, sports marketing agency, and we help brands who have invested in sport massively. Often, sports or brands invest because the CEO loves rugby or gets a hard on about golf or cricket or whatever it might be, or the marketing director does, and they invest millions of pounds and then they're not quite sure what to do with it. So for those of you who remember, we got involved with Samsung because they had invested in the England rugby team round about the World Cup.
And those TV adverts with Jack Whitehall.
Yeah,
class. Absolutely class. So hang on, your company sorted that out and then you started in it.
Yeah, it's called double dipping.
Cool, getting paid twice. Conflict of interest, but congratulations, I've done the same thing.
Well, if you write the strategy, what you say is that you don't really want to get involved with any players that no one knows who they are yet, do they? I mean, they may go on and win the World Cup. They didn't.
But they ain't won one yet, mate.
So I said, what you need is some national treasures like Martin Johnson and Jason Leonard and, you know, myself. So and Jack Whitehall, who was superb, as you can imagine.
He was amazing, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was
if you're not getting a state funeral, you're not in the advert.
And I said I tried to persuade Martin Johnson to star in these ads. And he's, you know, Martin's probably done a podcast for you guys. He's a bit uncomfortable in that kind of environment. So he said, look, what should I do? I said, well, look, there's a funny guy, right? And it's not me and it's definitely not you. I said, really, what we're looking for, what Samsung are looking for, Martin, is just for you to be yourself. He said, well, what do you mean? I said, well, socially awkward, miserable, ugly. He said, yeah, I can do I can do that, no problem at all. And he was the absolute star of the show. He was superb.
There was one advert where Maggie Alfonsi was showing, like, doing a tackle, and she was battering some amateur civvy. Were those lads brought in? They must have had the time of their life.
They were paid £100 a day. They were from a couple of rugby clubs. Westcombe Park, I think, was one. And he's going to kill
scum.
Me.
Scum. Westcombe Park, scum.
You can't call anyone scummy these days. It gets you into a lot of trouble. You've got to be very good.
That's true, actually.
So,
hold on. Let me
get the time code. Cut that out, Chief.
1919.
It is a shithole. I mean, my friend plays there, that's why I'm saying that. I love it there. I've got friends that know people that play there.
So these lads obviously were paid to be extras on the set, and they were fantastic. And then in between filming, they obviously got coached by Martin Johnson, Jason Robinson, Jason Leonard, and myself. And it was like a 3-day stag for them, I think. To be fair, it's like weird and perfect. But no, they were. So that's what that takes up most of my time. The charity Rugby Works, BBH Sport, and then got the delights of working for BT Sport and tomorrow for ITV. So, very excited. I mean, it's sort of bittersweet when you're commentating on your own team. And Shanks, you'll know this, and Fletch, you'll know this as well. You know, the World Cup in 2015, it's quite hard to not swear on live on national television in that situation where, you know, Chris Robshaw decided to not, you know, Yeah.
You just wish you had a trank dart, didn't you? Like,
but I was with Shane Williams, who had been very quiet in the first half. To be fair, naturally, because England actually were winning that game at halftime, and then bizarrely, it was just all went horribly wrong. So hopefully, it'll be a different story tomorrow, but we'll get onto that later, I'm sure.
Yeah, we will. But we want to bring you back to. I mean, how old were you? Your first cap for England.
Well, I know I'm at 95 now, but I and obviously when you know I started playing rugby down the road at Staines Rugby Club. I started playing at the age of 8, I then sort of joined Richmond and played at school. Joined WASS in 1990, and I got capped in 1995, just after the Rugby World Cup. I didn't play for Bath at the time, so I didn't get picked for England.
That soon changed. They wouldn't pick any of us.
And
you know what today? Hang on, Shanks. Before you ask questions, Shanks, like,
yo,
today, just so you know, like, you think Shanks just, like, comes and turns into this comedy genius, his words, not mine, come, like, when the cameras or the mics are on. We're driving around today, like, we're driving through Richmond, and there's this bloke opposite the Richmond Athletic Ground. There's this bloke, like a normal bloke in a pair of shorts and trainers.
Probably, he's got proper rugby shorts on, he's got a rugby fleece.
He's a bloody
on.
Rugged lad.
Yeah, he's just crossing the road, right, and he pulls up right next to the car, he's waiting for the red light, the green light cross, and I've just wound down the window, I've gone, hey mate, David Flatman in the car here.
He's like pointing, I've got Flats here. It's like, it's fucking mortifying, like, absolutely, like, he did it about 8 times.
He just goes like, he goes, hi boys. Yeah, hey.
It's like, you fucking fell in. He did it to what? He pulled over to one bloke just up here, just on the way down here with Michelle Early. He pulls over. He's like, hey, mate, you ever heard of Dave Flatman? The guy's like, no. And he's like, yeah, brilliant. He's like, fucking showing off to no one, just trying to humiliate me. Like,
well, I have to say, do vaguely remember in 1999, going back to your original story, you know, front page of the News of the World, not my greatest moment in my career, to be fair.
No, but fun for the rest of us.
But it made white van drivers understand rugby, really. I get stopped the road. All right, mate.
Same boat, mate.
So, the answer to your question was 1995.
95, right, back. November. We're drawing it back November. Now. 95.
Against South Africa, Tim Robber, and this is how long ago it was. I mean, I'm sure Betamax video. I mean, I think I watched my highlights on Betamax video after going to... But there was no substitutes. Someone had to get injured for you to get on. So I was on the bench, and I sat next to Graham Dorr, who'd been on the bench 35 times for England and never got on. And he goes, here, I reckon you'll get on today. I went, why is that then? He went, if you'd have seen the size of those South Africans. I went, yeah, it's a good point. And Tim Robber came off in about the 60th minute, and I made my debut at Twickenham against the world champions. Mike Catt had called them average before the game.
Brilliant.
Yeah, I came on, they were 25-0 up. And I made my debut, and it's that kind of bittersweet moment in life where, you know, you've worked all your life to get, you know, to get captain or whatever, 20 years it was. And it's quite weird to win your first cap but lose the game, because you go into the changing room afterwards, you've got a big smile on your face because you've won your first cap, but everyone else in the changing room is utterly miserable. It's like death. But I was like smiling.
Yeah.
And I went upstairs afterwards at Twickenham Spirit of Rugby, and my mum, who, bless her, I miss her dearly. She passed away 10 years ago. Amazing woman.
Yeah,
East End woman, Irish. I mean, she would like give it to you straight after the game, you know, flats.
She told me I was shit once, that's why I said that, yeah.
I mean, not very good. But equally, you know, she'd give you all the encouragement in the world if you play brilliantly. You know what I mean? So I went upstairs and she's giving me the full kind of debrief, what I did well, what I didn't do so well, like she knew. And then she walked past, and Jack Rowell was the England coach, remember, from Bath. And she said, who's that? And I said, No. She went, no, who's that? I said, that's the England coach, Jack Rowell. She said, oh, I need a word with him. I said, Mum, you really don't need a word with him. She said, no, I do. So she walked up to him, tapped him on the shoulder, said, excuse me, I need a word with you. And he looked at her, he said, sorry, who are you? She said, who am I? She said, see him over there. She said, I'm the mother of the number 8 you brought on 25 minutes too late in the game. She said, it's pretty obvious what needs to happen, you know. And he looked at her, he said, what? He said, he needs to start next week. He went, okay, and walked off.
How'd it go? Did you start?
I picked in the season.
There you go.
The week.
There you go. There you go.
That was it.
So obviously then, you've been capped. You've had, I'd imagine, probably about 20 or so caps before the 97 Lions tour. Now, for us, for someone like Flat and I, and probably a lot of you guys here, you look mostly about late 30s, 40.
Mid-30s.
Apart from the guys at the front.
Paul, you look older, you look terrible at the moment.
Well, you played in the backs. I mean, we were.
But that was like a defining tour for us, because we're probably 16, 17 years old. We're watching that. We see the video after. It's an amazing tour. It's you won for a start, the camaraderie, the friendships you have. The best Lions tour video I think that's ever been created. I mean, how good was it for you being there?
I think, first of all, to go to South Africa in 1997, it's just, you know, just think back in time, you know, just Nelson Mandela, just the whole history of South Africa, not long been involved in that. And obviously, I'd learned a little bit about the Lions and what it meant, and, you know, done a bit of research, et cetera, et cetera. But, I mean, South Africa have changed over the years, but no one had won a test series in South Africa until the All Blacks went there the Lions in 74, which is something of legend and history. Yep. The All Blacks went there in 96 and won a test series in South Africa, probably because they got poisoned the year before and were very upset, but they went on and won the series. So to go there in 97, it was probably the first professional tour, wasn't it? That's the way we certainly looked at it. We had a load of, the selection was amazing, load of guys from rugby league, really good bond, and it was just a fantastic experience. And obviously, you know, to have someone like Fran Cotton, who was a Lions legend as our sort of team manager, never forget, he flew out of, you know, he organised a great week down in Oatlands Park in Weybridge. Where
it's hardcore training.
And then the last night we got on the smash, and obviously got to know each other brilliantly that night. And then he flew out a couple of days before us, and we arrived in Durban. And Fran is a huge guy, right? Big head, And he addressed us for our first sort of lion speech when we arrived in the Umhlanga Rocks, which is a beautiful hotel just in on the edge of Durban. And you've got the waves crashing in off the beach, surfers there. And he's clearly been out there 2 days and he's got sunburnt, right? And he goes, right, lads, this is no fucking fishing trip. It fucking looks like it to me. It was literally, we called him the pink salmon after that. Because
contrary to popular belief, this is not a holiday.
It was burnt to a cinder. But there, just, you know, it was just the most incredible environment to be in. But Ian McGeachan, Jim Telfer, we all know the speeches. Living with the Lions, I think. You know, nowadays, if you said something, right, we're going to put a camera crew with you for 8 weeks, you'd just, absolutely no way.
No way.
I mean, you know, one day's bad enough.
Yeah.
Just ask.
But you had videos of the lads getting on the piss and making inappropriate jokes and actually having fun. And it's one of those things that nowadays somebody will be offended by. Every single person knows it goes on. It kind of, as long as no one's getting harmed by it.
If you win, no one cares, do they really?
That's it.
I mean, we won the series 2-1. So the DVD looked fantastic, didn't it?
Yeah.
If we lost the series 2-1, I'm going,
That's like Eddie Jones now, isn't it? If England were winning, would that video have come out and just stabbed them in the back like that? I mean,
what do you make of all that?
Because
we do this stuff all the time, and I kind of, you don't want to be that guy that says, you know, if someone cops a high tackle and someone gets a red card, you don't want to be that guy that said, game's gone soft, because then you don't care about people's brains. You don't care about 15-year-old kids' brains. So you've got to be careful. But I look at that and I just think everyone's assuming that people are offended by it. And it's like these people are sort of vicariously offended. They're offended on someone else's behalf. I know some Irish people and I haven't met one that's offended. And there's this assumption that all the players are going to pin those words up on the wall and be super motivated, like a Grand Slam wasn't enough. It's kind of like, I'm just not sure anyone's asked about it.
I mean, they'll probably pin up like the €30,000 bonus they'll get for winning the Grand Slam.
Yeah.
Surely.
Yeah, no, it's been, you know, the timing of it is unfortunate, isn't it, really, to come out and say something like that.
Or perfect, have you looked at it?
Well, bought by the Sun newspaper and released, bought by the Sun newspaper a year ago and released, you know, a couple of days ago. So, no, it's...
Genius.
And, you know, I'm sure Eddie Jones, he's had a couple of run-ins recently, isn't he? Beaten up by Scottish fans.
Yeah. You're quite right. Yeah, I know.
For those of you who don't know, we've got a Scottish guy at the bat that said quite right, but he is drinking out of a plastic glass, so he's safe. Right. Now we shout him freedom.
Yeah. But we did offer you a Flats and Shanks stab fest at the door, so you should be safe. We don't want to offend anyone, okay?
I mean,
did you get in?
Personally, I mean, just if I could be serious for just a very small second, I think I'd have been more offended if I was Irish about the comments he made about Johnny Sexton last year.
Yes,
than I would have been about what I heard last week on that video. Do you know what I mean? And I think that's let's get some perspective here. Do you know what I mean? Because actually, that as an Irishman may have upset me a lot more.
Yeah.
Given that it was more of a sort of a personal attack on one of my players, as opposed to anything that, you know, in many ways it's a backhanded compliment. He's saying, you know, Ireland are the only team that beat us, and I'm really gutted about it, and it still upsets me now. And it was a year ago. So,
Well, do you remember you? I think you might remember this actually, Lowell, but this is not an international thing. This was we had a season at Bath where we were beating everyone. We got to the final, and then Lawrence and his mates beat us in the final. In that, it was the last year where you basically win the league, so you come top of the league. And then you wait 3 weeks while everyone else battles it out. And then you play them at the final at Twickenham when you haven't played for 3 weeks or you've had 20 minutes against Newbury. Like, it's an absolute shambles. And they quickly realised that everyone who won the league and had 3 weeks off before the final kept losing. So they changed the format. But you ruined my life. Thank you. Anyway, but
we played in the European Cup in between that, by the
way. Yeah, exactly.
You doesn't have to be at the end of your season if you're still in Europe.
No, but we were... We concentrated on the Premiership that year and have regretted that since. But I remember that season, we were beating everyone, having a good year. And then you came to the Rec, and we hadn't lost at the Rec for 18 months or something, and you beat us at the Rec. And on the final whistle, I remember Matt Stevens had done the interview on the TV during the week. And he'd said stuff like, no one's coming down here and pushing us around. We don't care who they've got. No one comes to our backyard and pushes us around. And in the next morning after it came out on the telly, we had a meeting about that interview, and it was like, do not do that. And that was literally the day that we had a press officer start briefing the players about not saying inappropriate things. Doesn't sound that bad, but you had, I remember on the final whistle, and it was 10-6 or something, which was the same, or something, 10-6 was the final, but it was like 10-6. Shit game, but good to watch. And for the purists. And I remember the whistle went, it was like full-time whistle. And literally, I was in a scrum against Will Green. And I remember just giving, I'm a big mate to Will Green, so I gave Will a hug. And I remember Lawrence walking straight past me to Matt Stevens in the scrum. And he said, "You watch what you say on the TV." That was it. Do you remember that? Do you remember that?
I mean, that's pot and kettle, really, isn't it?
Yeah, I know, yeah. Like, you've never done it.
You watch what you say to a journalist, son. You know?
Yeah, I know.
So, no, I mean, I think, you know, the game is about emotion, and any emotion you can get and you bring to the party is really important, yeah. You know, going into those big games, and I'm sure that still plays a part now. Mm. You know, things wind you up, don't they? And you use any little thing just to get that...
Get an edge.
Well, Steve Borthwick kicking me in the head didn't help either, to be fair.
There was one...
Danny Grew got punching me in the head. You know.
Danny got sent off for that. And then I remember Steve Borthwick, we got in on a Monday, and Borthwick was an absolute legend. I love him dearly, but he didn't talk to anyone like about anything other than rugby too much. Like, so I've known him since like 20 years. I've never had a coffee with him at his house, never been to my house, but doesn't mean he doesn't love you, apparently. So... I remember he wasn't there on a Monday, and we're like, "Where's Borthers?" And he'd been cited, and he was off at this disciplinary on the Monday and Tuesday in London, whatever. And he'd been done for kneeing Lawrence in the head, kicking Lawrence in the head, something like that. And Borthers came back, and Borthers loves to laugh.
2-year ban these days, isn't it?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I think he got a 1 week or something. But he properly booted you.
He did.
One week.
He was applauded. He was knighted, in fact.
Yeah, exactly. But he said in this video, and I'm not talking myself up, there's obviously not a mark to show for it, but I remember he said in the video, it played, and he's like, "I was serious because I knew we had a big game, I didn't want to get banned." But in this video, it's like, it's literally, it's the Tuesday, but then you had 24 hours to cite or whatever it was. So he does this, he boots Lawrence in the head, and Lawrence is like that, and he's like, in the meet, and what no one mentions is, at the end, you see this number one and Flatman coming to the screen and just go, bang, and we're like, smacking right in the chops. And he was like, we saw it, and the lawyer looked at me, and he's like, "We got the wrong bloke here." Yeah, there you go.
Well, obviously,
there you go. I also, Hagrid Tanks, I know you. Okay. But I remember. I remember being getting a yellow card playing against Wasps, and you beat us. You beat us 29-27 or something like that at Watford when we were playing for Sarries. And I remember just Lawrence was like, it was just a fucking joke what he got away with, if you ask me. Lying over the ball. Danny was like, "Next time he does it, I can twat him." Danny Grewcott. I was like, right. So Lawrence, in the end, he just lying on the ball. It was a joke. So he was probably not cheating. So I thought, right, I'm going to whack Lawrence hard as I can 4 or 5 times. And I don't care if I get a yellow or a red. He knows now it's a red. Then it was a yellow. And the next day, it was on a Sunday. And the next day, we turned up to England training. And I had a broken hand and Lawrence didn't have a mark on him. Nothing, like nothing at all.
Listen, I'm not.
I was
one,
in a cast like that.
I'm not one to sledge, but I was quite proud of the line I gave Steve Borthwick in that final.
Oh, brutal!
I said, the problem with you, Steve, is you train like Tarzan, but you play like Jane.
Yeah, brutal, and it just went quiet. It was brutal.
That kicked Danny Grewcock. Oh, he got sent off 2 minutes later.
It really annoyed Dan, and he got a red card for punching you, didn't he? Yeah.
In terms of being captain, were there any refs that were slightly easier to influence?
I always found it easier if I refereed, to be quite honest with you.
You were a referee, didn't you?
No, listen, we had some great referees. I mean, Ed Morrison, who I just saw, he's been decorated and celebrated quite rightly. He's an amazing referee. Chris White, I still look at people like Wayne Barnes and, you know, the difference between, you know, he is absolute quality out there. And just mentioning referees, it's going to be very interesting tomorrow. Obviously, huge game, so much at stake for both sides. Quite an inexperienced referee, isn't it? Angus Gardner from Australia. Mm. You know, we've had some massive issues around the breakdown over the last year, primarily because we keep getting caught behind the gain line, but massive issues. And against a guy who potentially will referee the breakdown slightly differently to the way we're used to it week in, week out. And in the Pro 14, you invite referees from other countries to referee, and I think it makes a huge difference. We sort of, you know, put our investment in English referees every week in the Premiership. And I think when we play international rugby, that sort of counts against us.
We used to have Ed Morrison come around. When Flats and I were at Saracens, Ed Morrison would come around at the start of the season and just explain the new laws to us, okay? So there's a player called Kevin Sorrell now who's backs coach at Saracens. Now,
massive nose.
Yeah. We used to get Kev to ask loads of questions because Ed Morrison thought his name was Steve.
So,
So go, "Kev, ask a question." He put his hand up and Ed Morrison going, "Yes, what do you want, Steve?" Like
that. I remember being in a scrum, going to a scrum against Tigers, and Tony Spreadby was like in the tunnel and we were like trying to bind and get a bit of a nudge. And Spreaders was in the way because he was trying to get us out in the right position, whatever. And I'm just knocking into Spreaders, like trying to get Spreaders out the way because I know that Darren Garforth's going to try and hurt me. So I'm like, right, I'm trying to get in there. And he's like, get off me, you fat bugger, is what he called me. And I remember, I didn't pinch his ass. I pinched like the back of his hammies. I said, there's a bit of flesh on there, our kid. And he literally reached down, and I was bending down for the scrum. Obviously, I've got an amazing six-pack, but I was bending down, and there was a tiny bit of my six-pack was hanging over the rim of my shorts. And he grabbed it. He went, good Christmas, was it, kid? That's like, imagine that now. Imagine that now. Fucking twat. No, I should have stopped kicking him when he's in the ambulance, really. He's dead now. We killed him. So, yeah, anyway.
Can we get three more pints, two Guinness and one Moretti, please?
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you.
I'll chop that one as well.
Don't know who's going to get it, but someone.
We're talking about the Six Nations, but you played in the Five Nations, didn't you? Because I don't know, like, it's probably difficult to see from there, but Lawrence is a lot older than us.
No, you can see.
He was my dad's favourite player. But but you played in the Five Nations, didn't you? Not the four, the five.
He wanted to find somebody else to support. But yeah. It was a lean period. Now, I played in the Five Nations. In fact, one of my first ever games for England was in the Five Nations against France. And we were over in Paris. And obviously, you know, coming into the England squad as a young back row full was quite a daunting prospect. There were some legends of the game, you know, Rob Andrew, Will Carling, Dean Richards, Mike Teague, you know, some just Mick Skinner, Jason Leonard.
Oh, yeah.
Incredible, incredible guys. And England were going through a period where they were, you know, fairly dominant under Will Carling. So I came in and I was rooming with Ben Clark in Paris, in the Versailles, Trianon Palace in Versailles. And Ben Clark had just come back from the Lions tour in New Zealand. He was a legend, an icon. He was the guy that they'd voted that they wanted to keep behind in New Zealand. And it was a real, you know, thrill for me on my, you know, second cap or third cap for England to be rooming with him. And we're talking about the amateur era now, so you have to sort of put that into context. Jack Rowe was the coach, and we got there on Thursday, so we're now 48 hours before the game. And I walk into the room with Ben Clark, and he's got a little Marlboro Light on the go, which sort of slightly took me by surprise. I wasn't quite expecting that. And he said, I'll leave the door open. This is like Thursday night. I said, what do you mean leave the door open? I thought it was some sort of initiation for me. Or something.
Yeah, they're all coming in with bars of soap in socks.
Well, I went to private school, went to boarding school. That would have been all right for me. Don't worry about it. So, no, he said, we always have a red wine. Thank you. We always have a red wine club on a Thursday night. I was thinking, really? It's a bit odd.
Thank you.
So next thing, the French waiter comes in with about 15, 20 bottles of red wine and starts opening them one by one. And then the England pack walk in, Jason, Brian Moore, you know, all the boys. I'm thinking, oh, this is going to get interesting. Anyway, we have a red wine club. So I thought, great. So anyway,
You like wine. That's fine.
You know, 48 hours before the game. So
that's great.
3 hours later, we, you know, all the forwards leave. And I wake up in the morning and the room looks like an abattoir, right? So anyway, Ben Clark says to me, right, you need to get rid of the evidence. This is now 24 hours before the game. You need to get rid of the evidence. So I said, well, what shall I do? He said, well, put it on a tray and go and stick it outside Victor Abogu's door. Well, I said, okay. So I put my dressing gown on, Trianon Palace, and I sort of went, you know, looked outside, thought the coast is clear. So I tiptoed down the corridor towards Victor's room, and who walks around the corner but Jack Rowe, the England coach. Now, imagine this, my third cap, right? My first ever Five Nations game, right? I'm the youngest guy in the squad. I'm standing in front of him in a dressing gown, right? With a tray, with 15 empty bottles of red wine, ashtrays, everything. And he looks at me, he goes, this doesn't look very good, does it? I went, no, it doesn't. And as if my life couldn't get any worse, I said, the dressing gown then opened up. And it certainly didn't look any better, trust me.
So, that was freezing in there. So,
a lot of air conditioning in there.
Yeah, they
he says to me, he said, who are you rooming with? I thought, oh, quick as a flash, I went, Victor Abogu. And he just looked at me, shook his head, in disgust. He said, best you play well tomorrow. I said, yeah, best I do. So he walked off and I stuck it outside Victor's room. And I came back and Ben Clark, another fag on the go. He said, you've been gone a while. What happened there? I said, oh, you don't want to know. He said, no, I do. I said, best you play well tomorrow, mate. As the last time he played for England, to be
fair.
Yeah,
there you go.
Great days. But I think preparations now on a Thursday are probably slightly different.
And I tell you what, thank God they invited the Italians in. Otherwise, I'd have zero tries, I think, to my name. But talking about Italy, right, we played Italy in 2009, right? Played them in Stadio Flaminio. And we were losing at half time, believe it or not. 9-7 is a cracking game. amazing. And Warren Gatland, our coach, right, comes in at half time and he's quite mellow, he's quite calm. And then you all know Sean Edwards. You know, if one's calm...
He's not mellow and he's not calm.
The other is mental. He wears tracksuit bottoms and, like, suit shoes.
You look at Sean and he's coaching Wales and you go, why the fuck's he got London Broncos tracksuit bottoms on?
Yeah, yeah, I know.
He wears
you know what I mean? He's got, like, a Wasp hat on and a Wales top. You just go... What's going on?
Like when you're in camp, you have to wear the right attire. Like he's the only one. He's the only one that has an exception. He can wear a leather jacket, white t-shirt,
dyspraxic, Asperger's.
It is quite hard to earn half £1 million a year and look homeless.
But anyway, we're losing. Right, we're losing 9-7, and then Sean Edwards is just ripping into us, and you know he's shouting, he's spitting on your face, and you know he's spitting on your face. He knows you're spitting on your face, but you can't wipe it. And he finishes. And he finishes, right? And Andy Powell, okay? What a bloke, right? A mental bloke. He gets up out of his seat. He's our number eight. And he's just he's going, right, that's it, boys. That's it. Let's get out. Next half. We'll put things right. And as he goes to open the door, he opens the door to go out. It's the cupboard, right? The bloody exit's the one next to it, right?
Oh, it's the wrong door.
A super sub comes on with about 60 minutes to go and scores a winning try.
Well done, mate.
That was me.
Well done, mate. You just got any tries against anyone that wasn't Italian or Japanese?
Romania? I actually capped England against Italy in the first ever game.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, which was incredible. 2000. Yeah. Can you imagine my dad, how proud he was. You know, Italian father, his son's playing for England, and I'm captain of England in the Stadio Flaminio.
Great stadium.
And I managed, you know, to obviously get him a job as the official translator, which was...
Did you?
Which was fantastic. So,
well, at dinner afterwards.
So we won 85.
Double dipping again, yeah?
We, of course, yeah, very good at that. It's the Italian way, isn't it?
Pay twice.
So we won 85-0, which was fat. I mean, the only downer was that Austin Healey scored a hat-trick, but it was, the Italians were not great in those days. So we won 85-0, but it was the best post-match reception I think I could ever say that we'd ever been to. They took us to a beautiful palace on the top of the hill in Rome. Anyway, I obviously speak a tiny bit of Italian, but I said to my dad, right, I'm going to speak in English and then you're going to translate it. So I sort of said, you know, this is the most amazing post-match reception. It's been a great. And my dad obviously was so nervous, he translated my English speech into English. So I said, no. I just like to say, my son.
Did he? He did that. Just slow and loud. Just do it slow and louder.
My son, he says, Dol mio, yeah?
What a shambles. Oh, brilliant.
Dear. Anyway, beautiful.
They're good times. Your son Enzo is meant to come tonight, but has blown you out to go to the pub with his mates. Good lad.
Honest burger and a few pints down the pub.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's actually a better night, to be fair. It's where he's should 16. All be. But, but he's it's quite a nice story because you took him down to play rugby. Was that Richmond he plays?
You know, listen, I've got two daughters who are very creative and you know, said to me, Dad, is it all right if we don't play rugby? And by the way, women's rugby, what a high it's on at the moment. It is unbelievable. Yeah. There's so many, you know, and quite rightly so. It's brilliant. But my son, obviously, it's quite tough. You see these amazing father-son relationships where, you know, Farrell, I mean, what about that tomorrow? You know, his dad's coaching Ireland.
Yeah, unreal.
Son's playing fly. I mean, it's incredible. And George Ford and his father. And there's many in history. My son, obviously, is playing rugby, enjoying himself. And I remember when I retired 10 years ago now, which feels like yesterday, but it's 10 years ago, I went down to the local rugby club. My son's 16 now. He's a massive unit. He said, Dad, I just want to start playing rugby. And it's with tag rugby. Mm. And I turned up and I had no idea quite what to expect, but I just thought, well, we'll do it. No, I'd never had a free Sunday for 20 years.
Yeah.
So took him down to Richmond and bumped into Jason Lennon. My son's called Enzo. Good name, by the way. And
I was saying, I hope he's good looking. Otherwise, Enzo Dallaglio, if he's minging and scrawny, I haven't met him, but is he going to be an operator?
Well, he hasn't played much rugby yet, so he's got a chance. So I turned up and Jason was there. Jason Leonard, he lives in Kew, and he was there with his son Jack. And Michael Liner lives in Richmond. He's there with his son Louis. And can you imagine, on a Sunday, this poor father who's got the short straw of coaching the kids, we sort of tapped him on the shoulder and said, right, see how you get on with those three anyway.
Don't fuck it up, mate.
He looked absolutely terrified, you know, having the three of us. Anyway, talk about, you know, genetics, DNA, whatever, chip off the old block. Basically, I mean, Louis Liner, who, by the way, now plays fullback for England under-16s,
is an
incredible rugby player. So even then, at age six, he could spin pass off both hands, he could spiral kick off both feet,
scoring tries.
And he was just the most amazing rugby player. So clearly, just like his father, Jason's son, Jack, just went around punching every other child in the face. And got sent to the naughty step about 58
times. Did he? Yeah.
And my son spent the whole time cheating and just...
Have a go at the ref.
Yeah, so... but we had the most... You know, I mean, it's a great thing to do with your kids, you know, to do that mini rugby and, you know, boys or girls. And we went on tour a little bit later on when they were 12. And we went to, you know, Bicester and Oxford. We had a fantastic few days away. 75 dads.
That well-known rugby hotbed.
75 dads, 75 lads. We go away on tour. We come back to Richmond. And it's been a two-day...
Come back full of Ralph Lauren from the shopping centre.
Absolutely. Well, penicillin with you, Shanks, to be fair. So anyway, as the coach pulls in back at Richmond Rugby Club, my son goes running off and my wife, Alice, has picked him up. And anyway, he says, Mum, that was possibly the best 2 days of my life. She looks slightly pissed off by it. Which I mean, you know, your dad's been around for like three weekends and suddenly it's the best 2 days of your life. And she looks at me and I'm hanging, you know, literally bags under my eyes. And she says to Enzo, age nine or whatever he was, she said, what time did Dad get in last night? And he looks at me all worried. He goes, Mum, what goes on tour stays on tour.
Yeah, he never got in last night.
Trained him well.
He will be a top class rugby player, is all I can say. Doesn't matter what level.
Welcome aboard.
He understands the way it works. Can I just say, guys, what an absolute privilege and pleasure it is to be up here with you two legends. I mean,
Thank you. I was waiting for that.
I mean, you know,
finally,
the word legend is slightly overused in modern day rugby, but it's not.
And it is being here.
But can I just say that, you know, this is the best podcast I've ever heard. I mean, it's certainly better than that Hamilton Good shower of shit.
That load of shite.
Bloody amateurs. Anyway, the Cabbage Patch in Twickenham. Can we make some noise? Yeah.
Hang on. Shanks, have you just done that booze cruise thing? Where it's like, who's ready to party? And everyone's like, Ruin. You're like, I can't hear you. It's like, fuck off, I'm 38.
They're all diving overboard now. Look.
Yeah.
You've got to wind them up a bit, you know. And also, you know, we do need some noise on the podcast because it doesn't really pick up a lot of the cheers on the mic. So that was really good. Thanks very much.
Yeah, there are people here, everyone.
Welcome to part two. Moving on, so I think we finished.
We have. We got some questions.
We're going to save the questions for a little bit later. But we'll have about.
You can see that one of us has notes and one of us does not.
It's a connected, joined up show here, isn't it? Really?
Yeah, yeah. The question's a bit later on, though. So Shanks, take it away.
You always deliver, don't you? That's why.
No, I don't. I do chicken or pork. right. So. The 2001 Lions Tour, selected for that again, Australia.
Well done.
Yeah, well, congratulations. Just out of interest, how did you find out about the tours and how you were selected? Because it's a little bit different now, isn't it?
Yeah, the first one was on Teletext, I think, to be fair.
No,
the first one was by letter. Second one was, as is the whim these days, was on Sky Sports, wasn't it? So it was you had to wait till... So it was announced live on TV and sit there and wait for all your teammates to go, oh, bad luck, mate. I'll go, well done. I'm really pleased for you.
Do you know all those videos that go around?
I didn't go, but you are going.
But you know all the videos of like the lads, I've said this before, but the lads that get him, they got these lovely videos of all the teams sitting in the team rooms and it's like, the list comes up and it's like, whatever it says, it's like, you know, Jonathan Davis, everyone's like, and we're going mad for their mate. I want the other videos. I love Joe Launchbury. I think he's a wonderful player, a lovely man. I want his video from that day. I want the lads filming Joe like, fuck.
They've gone past L and it ate me.
I want the diary insert for that day, really, is what
yeah,
I want.
Yes, I want. Yeah.
Dear diary, not a good day today.
Bastards! Bastards!
Warren Gatland is a...
Yeah.
But so you're selected in 2001. You go to Australia.
Yeah, tour my cruise shit didn't go so well, did it, really?
I would have.
Yeah, but... Yeah,
I mean, and then we go on to the main tour, right? 2005, in my one. That's what we call it.
Classic.
Classic. Yeah, and
doomed from the start, really. Wales won the Grand Slam that year.
I know. So you got to pick loads of them, and you know they're not actually that good. They just got a really good team spirit. That's how they won it. But they're individually, they were rubbish. Is that about right, Shanks?
Well, I don't want to name some of the players that went on that tour.
Don't then.
All right, I won't.
To be fair, I went on that tour, and 10 days in, I broke my ankle, didn't
I? Oh, your leg fell off on that.
The first game, wasn't it? Yeah, Bay of Plenty.
I went to help Brian O'Driscoll with a tackle, and it was the wrong thing to do. I got my studs caught in the ground, and broke my ankle. Yeah, and we were in Rotorua, do you remember?
Yeah.
And I got stretchered off the field. And I thought, well, I better, you know, I was in absolute agony. My ankle's facing the wrong way. And I took my line shirt off, and I gave it to the guy. And I said, hang that on the peg of the guy that I'm playing against, because he might want that. And I get in the ambulance, and I arrive at Rotorua General Hospital, and there's no one there. Well, of course you're not. They're all at the game, right?
There's nine people in the whole
and
town.
And there's one young kid who's been left there. He's a young junior orthopaedic surgeon. He's obviously really excited. He goes, mate. He said, I've just seen it on the telly. He said, I reckon you fractured, dislocated your ankle. And I'm like lying there with my ankle facing the wrong way.
Yeah, you're a doctor, mate.
I went, yeah, no shit, Sherlock. Well done, mate.
He was actually a plasterer.
And then he started foaming at the mouth. And he goes, can I have your kit? Because I'm still wearing the Lions kit. And I went, I'll tell you what, I'll do you a deal. Not one of those deals.
Don't say deal.
I said,
you got any soft drinks?
I said, I'll do you a deal. I said, well, it was one of those deals actually, because I said to him, "I said you get me some fucking morphine." I said you can have the whole kit bag. To be fair, so he went off and he got me some morphine. Came back and I was in La La Land, and then 2 hours later, the surgeon comes back from the game. He's pissed. I can smell the booze on him, and he grabs my ankle and he said, "Yep, we'll operate on him in the morning." And I looked at Gary O'Driscoll, the doctor. I said, "There is absolutely no way this guy's operating on me." I said, "Go and find me Sean Fitzpatrick, or Jonah Lomu's surgeon." And I went down to Auckland the next day, and I had had an operation and had my, you know, nice piece of kiwi rust put in my leg. And the surgeon comes in, and he says, right, good news and bad news. I said, well, what's the good news? He said, the good news is you've got a nice piece of kiwi rust in your leg. He said, you'll be playing again in about 6 months.
Bit of old cattle grid in there.
Yeah, exactly. I said, well, what's the bad news? He said, the bad news is you can't fly home for 3 weeks. So I said goodbye to the Lions the next day. Shanks and I had a little embrace and said, that's not bad news. That's catastrophically bad news. I had to stay in Auckland for 3 weeks on my own, which, as you know, it doesn't take 2 days to get around Auckland, does it, really?
I mean, that was obviously bad news for you, that you dislocate your ankle in the first game, but I did score a try in that game. sorry, every cloud.
Scoring tries all about timing, isn't it, really?
Finished off a try. Should I say, but that was obviously a tough time for you, because I remember you giving a real good emotional speech when you left, but you're taking away, you know, you got yourself in a real good physical condition. I know, I remember seeing you.
Well, for an old kid, yeah, I was actually. No, I was okay, actually. Do you know what? Simon Taylor was also injured that night.
Yeah, shit, what a player.
Yeah, he actually torn it. Well, he was number eight. Hold on a minute.
He was the third best number eight on that tour. Yeah. I mean, who else was there? I don't know. I'm trying to put in two places.
Well, he'd actually torn his hamstring off the bone, so he was actually going home as well. So I said to him that night, I didn't really like him. One, he was Scottish, and two, he played number eight. So
and he's weird, like, yeah.
Well, it was strange, wasn't it?
Yeah, he is,
well,
yeah. I like that, but you don't. Yeah.
You knew him at Bath, didn't you?
Yeah, very, very weird, but lovable. I loved him, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like that sort, like the dog that shits in your house, but it's characterful.
Okay. I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
Good analogy, mate. Where were we?
Are we still on script, or are we...
No, we got... No, I mean,
that wasn't part of the script, as far as I'm aware.
Ask Lowell about... Oh, no, don't know. Yeah. Definitely not that one.
But go on, Shanko.
I was going to say, we interviewed Gareth Thomas last week, and we were just asking him about various stuff. But about country, about club, about the Lions, and he was saying very honestly that nothing compared to captain in his country. You know, that was the number one thing. The Lions didn't come close. You know, it was, for him, the biggest achievement in his career was captaining Wales. Now, I'd just like to
know, your opinion on what, you know, what was a big, what was your biggest achievement, I suppose?
Well, I think beating Bath in 2004 in the final. Yeah. Probably. It'd be that now. Watch.
What, for the second time? Again.
Yeah. I mean, like, I suppose, where does it stand on the ladder of things?
I think the greatest thing that could happen to you is getting picked for your country, actually. Most people don't, their first cap is never normally as captain. So when you arrive in the team, you're not captain. And very rarely do you finish as captain. So I think for me, you know, if you're lucky enough to get the armband at some point, that's a lovely thing and a great honour. But I think getting picked to play for your country, whether it's England, Wales, Scotland, Ireland, whoever, New Zealand, it's the greatest honour and you know you could ever have. And you represent the hopes, dreams and aspirations of millions of people. And there's a huge responsibility that goes with that. And I think to walk out there in front of, you know, 85, 90,000 people at Twickenham, and to do that is a huge thing.
So that was just Enzo just driving past. Yeah.
That was an Enzo. Yeah. He actually thinks he's named after the car, to be fair, but he's actually named after Enzo in the Big Blue. But, you know, good film, by the way.
Close enough. Yeah.
Probably going around in a McDonald's car park or something. That's what you do at that age, isn't it?
Doing burnouts.
Yeah. I mean, so your time with England then, like, who would be the people that you'd want to sit by when you're having food and you're
Yeah, these are my favourite questions, because they're the nerdy ones that, like, when you go to, like, rugby dinners like we do and you sit on a table, people ask you, there are like 10 questions that people ask, and it's easier to get bored at giving the same answer. But the truth is, it's what people actually want to know.
Yeah.
You know, so we're not going to ask you if you have to watch what you eat and you train every day because you don't play anymore. But yeah, Shanks is right, like stuff like...
What do you weigh?
No, we don't talk about that.
Well, who do I want to sit next to when I'm eating food? Not you, Flax.
But on a sun lounger, I'm your guy.
Unless we're on a Sunday all-you-can-eat menu, which is pretty good, yeah?
Yeah, well, Duncan Bell, my old mate from Bath, who played for England a few times. Now, that is a fat bastard, okay? But he lost loads of weight. He absolutely loads of weight. And he was down to, like, I mean, this sounds ridiculous, but he lost 6 stone and was down to 16 stone. But he looked emaciated because of what I'm used to seeing. And I saw him at the weekend. He's back up to about 19 and a half, 20 stone. Looks perfect. I'm so happy with that. Because when people lose loads of weight and look fit, I really fucking resent that.
But you've done 2.5 stone anyway. So well done you.
I spent more of my life at Peniel Park than I did at home for about the best part of 8 years. And I roomed with Jason Leonard, which is unique experience. He was my kind of buddy. He played for England in 1990, made his debut. I made my debut 5 years later. So he had 50 caps by the time I'd arrived. So he sort of took me, you know, being an East End lad, you know, a bit like myself, he sort of took me under his wing and sort of thought that he'd teach me everything he knew, which was... A lot.
Yeah, loads.
I swear he used to photograph his carpentry certificates. I've said to him, Jace, show me something you've actually made rather than you've actually destroyed.
Yeah.
But look at this, left-handed drinking, well done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Buffalo for flats.
Yeah, stiff arm.
So when Clive Woodward used to present to the team in the team room, you know, we'd sit in that kind of that shape, and myself and Jason and Martin, you know, there'd be an interesting sort of senior players sort of group right at the front, just to sort of, you know, say that this better be good, by the way. Do you know what I mean? This meeting better be good, because, you know, you look around and there'd be people sort of rebuild, you know, designing their hi-fi sort of cabinet for the next 20 minutes or whatever. Yeah. So meetings should never last more than about 10 minutes, should they?
If that. I remember being in one meeting and I used to get separated from Julian White the whole time because we were always pissing ourselves and pathetic. And I remember Clive saying in this Q&A once that he basically, not actually urinating, but anything that anyone said, we would be falling over laughing. And I remember Clive once making a joke in the Q&A and he's like, I basically had to weigh up. I got to pick one of these guys and drop the other one forever because they are an absolute bloody nightmare. Anyway, congratulations, Julian, 51 caps. I remember being at one meeting and they separated me and Clive walked in and he goes, no, move, don't sit with, this is serious stuff. Flats, get away from Whitey. And I went like 3 rows back and sat next to Danny Grucock, who's my mate from Bath. And at the back of the meeting, he was like, I want everyone taking notes. I want to see everyone like Hilly, brown nose, taking notes. I want everyone taking notes. Otherwise, this is just fucking words, yeah, and you'll forget it all. And Danny was like, yeah. And I look on his pad, and he had one picture of tits. And he had, honestly, and then he just had written three times, feeling sleepy. We're like 8 minutes in an England meeting. Like, That's exactly how it went.
I think your relationship with the coaches changes over time, doesn't it? When I first came into the England squad, you would not believe this, but we used to play on the England game on a Saturday, and then on a Sunday they would wake you up, and you'd go for a 4 or 5 mile run on a Sunday after the game. I mean, apparently, you know, that's like warming down. Do you know what I mean? Can you imagine? Roger Utley was the team manager when I first came in the team, and he's there with his clipboard in the Petersham Hotel, and we've gone off on this run, you know, 3 mile run on Sunday morning. We're all absolutely battered, and anyway, Mickey Skinner, who's just an absolute legend, he said, "Fuck this," he said, "I've had enough of this." So he hails a cab. Right, but about sort of 10 minutes into this run, and we said, "What are you doing, Mickey?" He said, "Oh, I can't be doing with this." He said, "I'm going to get a cab back." I said, "Yeah, but you know, Roger will be there." He said, "I'll wing it." So we arrived back at the, you know, he arrives back at the you know, Petersham Hotel, and Roger's there with the old, you know, clipboard, big purple tracksuit, just marking off everyone as they come in. And he says to the cab driver, he said, "Right, just do a couple of laps of the car park." He's like, and he's ducked down, and obviously he realises that Roger's not going to go away, and eventually he says, "Oh, forget it." So the cab pulls up, and he gets out, and Roger just looks at him, just incredulous, can't believe he's actually got a black cab on this run. And then Skins goes, "Oh, Rog," he said, "you couldn't sort out the fare." He said, "I've just taken all that." So I think the post-match warm down's probably changed a little bit.
Yeah, a little bit.
Today's obviously, believe it or not, it's about you men and women here today, all right? It's not about us, it's about you. Any of you got any questions that you want to just shout out, put your hand up, we'll pick on you.
We got one from the bloke who looks like a shit Gordon Ramsay / Kenneth Branagh, but worse. And by the way, these are his words at the urinal next to me, not mine. So he said he's got a top of the range question. It's an 8 out of 10. Let's hear it, Chief.
Cricketers have been promoting hair restoring products.
Yeah.
No, not tonight, mate.
It's about, the question was about hair restoration.
I'm just thinking, you guys.
What? Why are you asking us that? Have you had your hair done, mate?
No.
Because I would say that you're perfectly well-looking bloke, or were 15 years ago. But your best assets are your jacket, which comes off, and your hair, which presumably comes off. I know. Do you know what we?
You're glad you asked that now, aren't you?
I don't know. Like, I don't know about you guys, but I've actually had the email. I've had the email from whatever it is. It's like the Belgravia Centre or something like that. Yeah.
Carl.
I've had the email. Carl. Yeah, and it's like, and some guy emails me and he's like, "Would you be interested? I got your email from Andy Goode." Like, I was like, "No, man. I've been bald for 25 years and I'm only 28. So I was like, "No, I'm not interested. Not interested." And he's like, "Well, we're keen to do it. And as long as you mention it on the TV and you don't hide the fact that you've done it, we'll do it for free. Can you send us some pictures of your head, like from above?" And I was like, "I'm not doing it, but I'll send the pictures." And it was like, "We estimate that's 25 grand's worth of work." I was like, "Fucking hell, it's not that bad, mate."
And about 15 years.
Yeah, but the best bit is you have to grow your hair around the sides and back really long first so they can take loads of that out and plug it in. I look like Terry Nutkins by the end. Like, I'd be like Phil Collins. I'm out, mate.
I have seen flats with long hair, right? And he looks like Sonia from EastEnders. So.
Yeah, well, fucking
it's
meatloaf.
It's not a good look. We had Garth Jenkins, right? Garth Jenkins, coached an athlete for a long time. He became Welsh coach in, I think, 2006 or 2007, right? And we're in the World Cup in France. And Garth Jenkins would be naming the team, like, on a Thursday. And he'd be like, number 15, Gareth Thomas. Number 14, Mark Jones. Number 13, Tom Shanklin. Number 12... Number 12. Nigel, is it? James Hook. James Hook, number 12. He would forget in his head what the team was. He'd have to ask Nigel Davis.
saying, your name just rolled off the tongue. Yeah, but after that, he forgot everyone he got picked.
He'd call me Jim.
Jim Shanklin, yeah. We got, anyone else got any questions? You don't have to. We got one from Tim Payne. If you can, someone put your hand up in a minute. Tim Payne's actually tweeted us, and any questions for Lowell, we said. And he said, "Has he got his tools?" Can you? What does he mean by that? I think it's something to do with a famous speech or sort of pre-match talk or something.
No, it's like a little bit of inspiration. You never quite know what to say to rugby players, you know, when you're about to go out because you've been captain for 10 years and, you know, same old shit every week.
Yeah.
What do you say?
Go on, lads.
And, you know, sometimes when the games are huge, you have to say very little, you know, like nothing. And then sometimes you walk into a changing room before a club game and everyone's messing around and you think, we need to focus. So, you know, I used to say, have you brought your tools? You know, because, you know, it's a proper fight out there.
In certain positions.
Fight. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So they're looking at me, what is he on about? As if we brought our tools.
Yeah.
There's a fairly serious question here on Twitter from Philip Graves. Has the role of number eight changed since you retired?
That's a bit serious.
Not really, no. I mean, it's still the same, isn't it? No. I mean, we decide whether the bats get the ball or not, really. Yeah. I mean, it's as simple as that. And if they don't drop it, they get it, right? If they get caught behind the game line, they don't get it again, do they, for a little while. So, no, I think... I'm interested to, you know, now that I'm involved in, we're all involved in commentating on the game.
Oh, yeah, I do loads of TV.
The relationship... The relationship between the forwards and the backs. You know, I'd like to see, in the middle of a game, proper Barney going on between the number eight or the captain up front and the fly half behind going, what the fuck are you doing? You know what I mean? Because last time I just got up from a scrum, you know, I want the ball 50 yards ahead of me, you know, and I don't think we see enough of that, that proper aggro between, between teammates.
Cause yeah, dead right.
As a number eight, I said Alex King, who I play with at WAS, you know, if he didn't do our jobs, he would literally be screaming and shouting at you. And I'd like to see a little bit more of that from Owen Farrell or from, you know, the guys leading the team, just absolutely bollocking the forwards or vice versa if things go wrong. Nothing
there was a no Nick Abendonen, who plays for Claremont now but played for Bath for years. We were playing against WASP, playing against you actually, Lowell, towards the end of your career, right at the beginning of mine. anyway, playing, and I was captain in Bath that day because there were like 38 injuries. And inspirational, and we hammered them, I think it was 12-11. And Nick, it was raining and it was wet, it was Ming and Dave, it was perfect because I was playing against Painter and we had quite a nice time together and whatever, and kept warm. And Nick Abendonen just used to try stuff. He was like, well, I'm going to get the ball, I'm just going to try stuff because he's a genius and there was stuff he could do that no one else could do. But when you chip the ball, when you do a little chip and chase on your own 22, it's almost never worked unless it's a game of sevens. So he did it once and then he did it twice. And at half time, I said, right, that's the end of the chip and chase on our own half. It doesn't happen again. So about 5 minutes into the second half, he did it again about 25 yards out, just outside our 20. He went for a chip and chase. And I think it was like Voicy or someone caught it and went in under the posts. And there's this picture of like whoever's taking the conversion. I think it might have been Sips taking the conversion for Wasps. And there are two Bath players who haven't gone back under the posts. So you've got all the Bath players under the posts and you've got Sips kicking the goal with a guy wait with a water bottle waiting for his tea. And about 20 yards behind him, you've got me and I've got Nick Abendonen by the windpipe. I said, do that again, you little shit. I'll break your fucking neck. That was it. That was captaining. That's how you do it. I wasn't captain the next week.
We've got a question on from Daniel Kerr on Twitter. Like, what was your playing weight? He's asked, how much weight have you lost since retiring? But you probably
me? Well, actually, since you are.
Well, the playing weights have changed. I mean, I was a big Peter Winterbottom idol. He was my sort of guy that I was like obsessed by watching growing up. He was 15 stone seven when he played for England.
Amazing.
Hard as nails.
Nails. Yeah.
You know, you move forward. I actually played metrically 110 kilo, I don't know, 17 stone four, something like that. Nowadays, the guys are what? Well, I mean, what's
well, I was with Billy Vunipola last week, and he's lost a bit of timber because he's been injured. He's doing a lot of running, and he said he's 130 on a good day, more like 135 kgs, which is 21 and a half stone.
I'm not having a whinge here about the old days and how we used to play compared to how it is now. But it was more of a running game. You knew that, and you know, you'd more likely have to play 80 minutes as opposed to 50 or 60.
Yeah.
So, you know, because we wouldn't empty the whole bench. You might bring on a couple of players. So aerobically, you couldn't be carrying that sort of weight. You know, you'd have to be aerobically fit. Yeah. Well, some of us had to be anyway.
No, we were very, very fit and naturally lean. But I remember playing against Sarries, and Census Johnston had signed for Sarries, and he was in a big bloke, but he might not have had a six-pack, but he was in great shape, like unbelievable athlete. And after the game, I had a load of mates in that team. So I got a couple of cans and went into the Sarries changing room. And all those sort of pre-match weights are up on the board. And I remember I was weighing in about, I was like 120, right. 125. And they're all lying. 120, 125, something like that. And I was quite a big loose head. And Census was 148 kilos, you know. And you're like, that is the average weight, no joke, of a silverback gorilla in the wild is 150. So with his fucking boots on, no wonder he snapped my back in half. But it was like just enormous. They're enormous. And that guy, Ueni Antonio, who plays for France, plays for La Rochelle, the title. So we did this thing over with the telly last year, and it wasn't part of the feature, but he walked into the room and I was like, if we tell him it's for TV, he'll just do it. And he won't know. So I was like, film this. And people always say the 20 stone, the 21 stone title. At that point, I mean, I was a bit bigger then. But I was like, I'm 21 and a half stone and I could fit in his coat pocket. Like, he is enormous. We weighed him and he was 6'6 and 26 stone. And this guy, yeah, but he's not there for his scrummaging. He's there for his running. Like, he's there for his ball carrying. I mean, just fucking enormous, you know, enormous.
Any more questions before we yeah, we got one down the front.
Talking about weight and being in the front row, Trevor Liotta, when he played for Boston, I mean, he was a big, big hooker, but very mobile, great hands.
Are you talking about the Ewok from Star Wars?
Trevor Liotta, the Ewok, yeah. What was that? No, what was it? What was Trevor Liotta, species-wise?
He was the Ewok from Star Wars, without a doubt.
Chihuahua.
But didn't your fitness coach move in with him as you were making
KFC
a run for the title?
KFC had run out of chicken or not, to be fair.
I did. I went to Mackie D's and we had a night out with the sun, is it, or the rising sun or whatever it is, or something up here after we played you guys. And I had a night out with Trev and people think I'm making it up. He had 5 Big Macs at McDonald's, one portion of chips he was cutting down, but he snuck in a bottle of JD and it was new because I remember it cracking when he opened it. And he drank it like Diet Coke. This is a pro player.
A little word on Trevor Liotta, because...
Amazing player.
Scored a lot of tries as well, didn't he?
Made just an amazing player. I mean, a cult hero, actually, of the game of rugby. I mean, Willie Ofengawi, all right, it was a big unit. He tackled him for Samoa against Australia. Willie Ofengawi was stretched off the field of play. Now, Willie Ofengawi was one of the biggest, hardest rugby players that played, you know, in the Southern Hemisphere. Yeah. Stretched off by Trevor. Anyway, our fitness coach, Bobby Paul Stridgen, who now is one of the legends of fitness.
He's the man.
The man. When he first came down, he was a sort of he was a YTS student from Wigan, and I used to have a whip round the changing room to pay him like a few quid just so he could stay for another week, really. And we moved him in with Trevor just to keep an eye. He was like on Trevor watch.
Yeah, Trevor watch.
Just to keep an eye on what
Carb watch. What
Trevor was eating. And I mean, Trevor, unfortunately, things unravelled a little bit for him. And the week of the Heineken Cup semi-final against Munster, we're playing over in Lansdowne Road, and his wife had obviously had enough, and she upped and left, took the kids back to New Zealand. And I remember doing the team talk in the changing room before we ran out in front of 55,000 fans. I said, Trev, we are your family now. I said, we are the only family you have.
And we don't even like you.
Anyway, we went out. Wasps gave away the first 18 penalties of the game. Trev gave away 12 on his own. Alex King goes, you might have overcooked that time.
Do you ever remember playing against Bristol and his hit against Ross Beatty? It's a bit niche, I know that. If you can find it on YouTube, it is the single most grisly hit I've ever seen, because Ross Beatty was number 8 for Bristol. There's a kick chase going on, and Trev, he weren't too quick on the old kick chase, you know. Pretty easy to avoid in an open space because he's the size of a terraced house. So it's like you can see him coming, but Ross Beatty thinks, this is my moment, I'm going to run over this guy and show him what strength really is. And it was absolutely horrific. But it's amazing, so have a look. No one died, so have a look.
We'll take one more question. We'll end on one. There's a quick hand.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Oh, it's you, Paul.
That's a big hand.
It is a big hand, yeah. Did Owen Farrell underestimate Scotland?
Just Owen Farrell? Yeah. Okay, fine.
Do players really give a monkey's what someone says?
Well,
in the press
conference, if you want to know about Owen Farrell, okay, other than the fact that my son Enzo said to me, Dad, is that Owen Farrell? Because he used to babysit for us, all right? Enzo turned the TV on a little while ago and went, Dad, Owen Farrell won't be babysitting anymore. I went, no, he won't be. No.
But he's up his alley, right?
I think it's Saracens. They got everyone in a room and they said, right, those who want to win, go and stand on that side of the room. Those who want to create memories in their rugby career, go and stand on that side of the room. And everyone went to the memory side, apart from Owen Farrell, all he's interested in is winning. All right, he's probably been hearing the calls inside his mum's tummy. He's an absolute winner, mate. Love him to bits.
Yeah.
Look at that hug. Lol just gave me a hug, by the way.
It's a man hug.
We're lions, you see. We're lions. We just walk past each other and have that
nod. For 10 minutes,
for 10 minutes. Look in it.
For 10 minutes.
That wink, that special bond we share.
As I was stretching off, all right, lol.
Lol, I just scored. I said I just scored. Move the mask off him. I just scored.
Can you sign this for me quickly?
Can I have your shirt? Can I have your shirt? Can I have your shirt?
Never mind giving him your shirt. What about me?
But anyway, that wraps up our live podcast with Guinness, with London Pride, with Fullers. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you for pushing tickets.
Cheers, guys.
You've been absolutely amazing. Put your hands together for Lawrence Solalio.
Cheers, Lawrence. Well done, guys.